This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group. I am here today with John Aronson. He is a general contractor, a licensed general contractor, and manufactured home contractor, a licensed real estate broker, and manufactured home dealer. And John has been in the industry in all kinds of facets, as well as his entire family, for a really long time. We had him back on the show in January and February. It was a promise I made to him because he was awesome in helping us build a chapter on accessory dwelling units. And he brings a really interesting angle because he's on the ground sort of helping homeowners and real estate investors decide what's best for them. And there's been a lot of updates. So John, thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
So, I mean, you were only on a few months ago, but there are 9 bills currently in some form in the state Senate and Assembly. SB 13, we just talked to Senator Bob Wachowski, who's been a cheerleader for the ADU movement since the beginning. And there's a lot of really interesting things specifically for real estate investors, in, I think the most exciting one being that the owner occupancy rule, basically the state is trying to regulate the cities to not allow, which is really interesting. What do you get a sense? I mean, maybe you have no sense. Do you think that this is going to go through? Is it being received positively from your point of view?
Well, I haven't seen any of these bills being received positively by any of the jurisdictions that we work with.
Me neither.
It's a tug of war. They are resisting it. They're telling people that the state's a bully and that a lot of them aren't really embracing it anywhere near as much as they should. So the SB 13 comes along at a very critical time.
It's a perfect time. I have a few friends in the planning community, and yeah, they really don't like that the state is forcing their hands and reaching into the municipality code. But the truth of the matter is affordable housing is a multifaceted conversation, and there's plenty of blame to go around, but this is a very interesting way to solve it, as so much so that in SB 13, as we talked with Senator Bob Wachowski about, he was talking about making sure the language is clear that ADUs do count towards cities' affordable housing goals. So, it feels like there's some things in there for the cities as well, whether they take it that way or not. But now, what markets do you work in again?
San Diego.
Okay.
Countywide. We don't venture out of San Diego. I mean, we're not huge contractors. We don't have branch offices or franchises or anything like that. We're just one family-owned operation, and we kind of keep it close to the vest, if you will.
Well, Linsa Bracknell, she's the mastermind that hooked you and I together when I was building that chapter in September, and now we're working on this January 11th event with the San Diego Creative Investors Association, and we're all working really hard. Now, that event is specifically aimed a little bit more towards owner-occupants, and I'm excited. I mean, the panel, the panel that I'm moderating, it's going to be the mayor of Encinitas, as well as one of her planners, Jeff, Greg Nicholas with the state housing, the California Department of Housing and Community Development. We've got a few finance people there, and then a taxpayers' rights advocate. I hope they don't fall asleep because some of those topics seem pretty boring. But the target audience is owner-occupied. And the reason that we're doing so many ADU focuses is because I want to make sure that the investors on the streets are getting the information that they need. In your experience right now in San Diego, where are things getting stuck?
Well, it's just overall, things are moving along a lot better today than they were the last time we spoke. There is, compliance starting to come about in pretty much all the jurisdictions. They're just taking their time and enacting a lot of them, and a lot of them are having a tough time trying to deal with waiving entitlement fees and developmental impact and environmental impact fees and things like that. A lot of a lot of the public utilities wish they could charge for new service and new meters and all that, and that kind of stifles progress to some extent, but not to any major extent. Our biggest problem is SDG&E.
Really?
They are so backed up. Oh, my God. They're so backed up, Aaron. It's ridiculous. They're 2 months. If I just called the other day for a client that we need to have a temporary deactivation for in order to do a crane set on a manufactured home in their backyard. It's less than 10 feet from a power line. So SDG&E has to come out and disconnect it temporarily with a four-man crew and be there on standby during the whole process and then reconnect it. And that's a $3,000 to $5,000 added cost. And they can't always guarantee that they're going to show up on time. This is ridiculous. Plus, it's a two-month wait to even get somebody to come out and evaluate the project.
Oh, no. Wait, so you're just talking about somebody showing up and saying, yes or no, this will work?
Yeah, exactly.
Now is that
giving you a price for it?
SDG&E or the city?
That's SDG&E.
Wow!
Across the board. I mean, they're the biggest debacle that's going on right now. And I talked to them personally. There's nothing they can do about it. They're having manpower problems like everybody else in the state of California. They're having their labor issues, mm-hmm. and they're having some turnover, and they're having some advancements and things like that. So it just keeps the ball rolling just a little too fast, and they're not connecting all the dots. It's costing homeowners a lot of money.
Well, I'm laughing in part because one of the caveats of Bill SB 13 is that the city's got, they have 60 days to, well, I guess it's to approve the permit. I guess the city could approve the permit pending utility sign-off. And I know about this a little bit because I have a family member in the utility business at Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and I talked to their team over there. And for at least on their side, one of the issues, it's not necessarily a crane issue, but if you look overhead and there's a power line and somebody wants to build an ADU under it, there's a liability issue there. And if it's a public-owned utility, that means the liability would be to ultimately the ratepayers. So if the power lines fell, a fire, happened and somebody got killed, the utility could get sued and therefore the rates of the consumers might go up. So I can understand that. And at least in LA, the conversation was between the mayor's office and the utility. The mayor's office wanted somebody to sign a waiver, but I would also be uncomfortable with that. Yeah, it's all cute until somebody gets hurt and then people are looking for money. So sounds like a different issue though for SCG&E. It just sounds like they just can't get people out on site to look at the project and whether it's going to go forward or not.
Well, that's part of it. And then another concern, I mean, if you're paying $10,000 a trip each way for a crane, and you've got a truck with a 600 square foot ADU being sitting on the street somewhere, waiting to get offloaded by that crane, and they both show up, and they're there when they're supposed to be, and all the streets are blocked off, and there's traffic control, and everything's ready to go, and then all of a sudden you get a call from SDG&E saying that they're not going to be able to make it, or they just don't show. You're talking major problems. It's thousands of dollars. It's going to end up nasty. It's going to end up with a very unhappy client and a homeowner, and probably end up in a lawsuit. And believe me, those are real examples. They have happened.
Now, for your business, who's calling you the most, real estate investors or the consumer?
I'm getting from all sides. I'd say it's a good 50-50. I work with investors every day. I am an investor, as you know, myself. And I'm looking at a property right now. It's a peach. It's got an old, decrepit four-unit carport, and it's a duplex behind it, built in the 70s. And we want to, if I could make a play on it, I'd tear down those four old carports, and I'd replace them with a four-car garage and a 1,200 square foot granny flat or ADU on top of the garage apartment. And that would increase the usability and revenue producing potential tremendously on that property.
And well, look at you, not even getting rid of the parking. No. That's amazing.
Yeah, not getting rid of the parking, making it better, making it enclosed garages instead of open carports, and adding and accommodating the city's compliance, because it's adding an extra dwelling on a property where there's already a duplex.
Wow. Yeah, we had covered that last week, that some real estate investors don't understand that this is not just meant for single family residents, but it can be, you can build an ADU on a duplex, triplex, or a fourplex. It doesn't matter.
Yep, that's right. It's a coastal area where they're getting pretty, you know, reasonable rents. It's not spectacular, as you probably well know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've heard investors, even out here in the Inland Empire, there are a few cities that people are bringing in their permits and they're just rolling their eyes because they didn't create the local ordinance and they're just having to sign off on it. So, but they're being able to build something for around $100,000 and it rents for, you know, $1,500 a month. That's yep. That'll work.
That's a good, you hit both numbers right on the head. You ought to be in my business.
Well, I think that's the target, but let's, I think this piece of the conversation might take a little bit of time. So let's, because I think there's a lot of noise out there. And I think one of the frustrations is that depending on which municipality you're working with, the conversation can be really different. Just throwing it out there real quick, why I want to cover this. There's some cities that are looking at tiny homes being able to fill this ADU concept, but that's a municipality by municipality play. Tiny homes are regulated the same way an RV is, so it falls under DMV code, and it would fall upon the different cities to make that allowable or not. As a real estate investor, that play is particularly interesting because an RV or a tiny home doesn't trigger reassessment of the property. So let's get into a little bit of the nerdiness. Let's talk about Title 24, 25. So Title 24 is the California Building Code where that's stick built. That's something where it's going to be on a pad and it's a stick built home, correct?
And a modular.
Correct. So modular is just where the walls are being built off site and you're basically bringing them in and constructing them like a regular house. It's just the walls were built off site.
No, that's a prefab, Aaron.
Oh, okay. Modular.
The prefab is what they call a kit home or a flat stack where they do it. It's a series of floor, wall, and roofing components that are all flat stacked on a low bed trailer and hauled to the job site and then erected. A modular is much like a manufactured, except that it doesn't have a frame under it and it's not under the auspices of Title 25. With a modular home, though, does fall under the same Title 24 requirements as site-built homes do.
Okay, that makes sense. Now I'm very visual, so I'm remembering the book we created, and I remember looking at modular, so I understand. So in my brain, it's like boxes, and you're stacking boxes next to each other or on top of each other for the modular. Okay, but
yep,
technically a modular is a prefab, though, is it not?
Well, I guess they're all prefabricated in the sense that it's offsite construction. That's the big buzzword now today is offsite construction.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Replacing factory-built housing. Pardon me?
Yeah, that is what's confusing, is sort of the prefab. It can fall under Title 24 or 25, depending on, well, let's get into Title 25. So manufactured housing, mobile homes, nobody uses that word anymore. They do, but it's incorrect now, right? That's not cool to say anymore.
It's profanity.
Yeah, well, it just makes me laugh. You had turned me on to Clayton Homes, and when I was out in Texas on a trip, they had a plant there. I didn't get to walk through, but I saw on the outside, and man, manufactured housing has definitely come a long way. So it's not what I think people think of when, you know, in the 70s and 80s when they think of manufactured homes. So some of these just look like a stick built. You really wouldn't know the difference.
No, in the 60s, we used to call them wobbly boxes.
Yep.
Because that's exactly what they were. They were real thin and light. They weighed about 10,000 pounds. I mean, yeah, about 5 tons, 10,000 mm-hmm. pounds per section. You know what they weigh today? It's like over 25,000 pounds.
Oh, wow.
That's the difference in the construction. That's the difference. You know, where's the beef?
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, with your client stack right now, I guess let's look at the pros and cons of looking at something that's stick built. And this is why I like talking to you, because you look at each site as it's sort of its own thing. And you're going to tell a client whether it's going to be more efficient, time effective, save money as well, looking at all those things to build a stick built or a manufactured. If you're looking at an owner occupant, in general, are they leaning more towards the manufactured or the stick built?
Well, from a cost standpoint, they all are very hopeful about the manufactured element. It's a lot less costly. I could put a, let's say a 14 by 40 foot or 15 by 40, 600 square foot ADU in somebody's backyard completely for under $100,000. Mm. And that generally includes all the utility work. And I use generally very cautiously because there are some variables there that really do impact the overall cost of the overall project. And you know, I mean, I'm talking $25,000 to $45,000, which is a huge gap.
Yeah, when you're talking about $100,000, spread, that's a that's a big spread.
$100,000 is a big spread, but I mean, if you go site built, and we're in that business too. I mean, my son is just as busy as he's ever been. And he's doing multiple ADU projects, mostly retrofits, bringing some of the you know, unpermitted, non-conforming ADUs up to code, or just reconstituting them so they're legally rentable. But it's a fast-moving business. It's either way. And if I can't put a manufactured home, I'm the first to admit it. I had to, you know, give the customer, a client, the bad news just the other day, and tell them that it wasn't going to work for them. And then it was that same client with the SDG&E situation. So there's some cases where it just won't work. If you can't roll it in or crane it in, then you got to build it on site. Or you can do a prefab, a kit home or a flat pack.
And when it's a Title 25, so a manufactured home, does that trigger reassessment of the primary residence, the property?
Yeah, it goes because it has to be placed on a foundation.
Okay.
In order to be permitted, you know, and signed off, you got to have it on the approved manufactured home foundation, which is not a poured in place stem wall or slab on grade. It's a mechanical. It's an approved and engineered approved mechanical foundation system that goes underneath the home.
Okay.
So then it can be reassessed.
I've never really been through that process before. So looking at stick built compared to a manufactured home, how does the tax assessor look at that? Is it one more valuable than the other? There's not always comps. So how are they evaluating that? Is it just price per square foot? They look at what the estimated primary and just carry it over to either the manufactured or stick built?
You know, I really don't know, to be honest with you, Aaron, how they assess that or how they come to terms with it. I'm thinking that probably, because it's all so new and there's very few manufactured ADUs that I'm aware of that are even going in because of some of the, you know, the issues on site. So I imagine if it's on a foundation system, that it would be assessed the same way as real estate would. I know one of the individuals, just to stray a bit, who's going to be on our panel is an expert in that particular, the issue of appraisals and assessments and stuff like that. And so it'll be interesting to get his take on the 11th. But I have a feeling that it's going to be assessed as an improvement and be assessed according in the same way that a site-built structure would be assessed.
Okay.
But it's only assessed on the added square footage. It's not retroactive to the entire home.
Okay. Got it. Understood. I didn't know I've never done that before, so didn't know what that looked like. So you're just saying it's just the improvement, so it doesn't trigger a reassessment for tax purposes for the entire property?
Correct.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
All right. Well, we'll check on that because that's really important, especially for owner occupants who have been sitting on a home for 40 years and the play is that they want to build one of these. Actually, we opened up the last call to SDCIA members as well as our members of our Norris Group subscription. And there was a lady that called after and she was concerned about it. She was having problems in San Diego getting it built to start with. They're saying that she couldn't do it and she was frustrated, but they're they're trying to be as most cost efficient as possible because they want to age in place. So she was debating whether or not to live in the ADU in the back and rent out the primary, or, you know, there's so many different options, which are really cool. Let's talk about financing real quick while we're on this. So a real estate investor, I've only seen stick-built right now. And throwing it out there again, I haven't seen an issue with the appraisal coming back. It seems like the appraisal is just coming back based on a price per square foot. They just sort of carry it over into the back. And even with there's not a lot of comps in the area, the appraisals are coming back as expected. It's the financing that's become an issue, even if it's to a primary with a stick-built ADU. A lot of lenders are looking at it like a duplex. So if it's an owner-occupant who wants to come in, they're wanting a significant amount down. So if it's a first-time home buyer, it sort of kicks them out, unfortunately. But when we introduce, I think that'll work itself out in time. I think lenders just have to get used to seeing this and see the opportunity that's ahead. But when it comes to manufactured home, I almost want to warn investors, you have to see it coming. Because some lenders just don't like mixed inventory. Is that your understanding as well?
Well, no, you hit the nail right on the head. That is an issue. Appraisals are an issue. Always have been. Funding is an issue with some lenders. Some lenders it isn't. It just depends on the situation. But it applies to just site-built ADUs as well, until there's enough of them out there for people to comp with. It's really a crapshoot. But I like what you said about, the appraisers at least, wrapping their arms around the fact that there's that improvement involved and they're giving it the added value. That should help with the lending aspect, I would think.
It'll be interesting because I haven't talked to anybody yet. I know people who are building junior ADUs, so that's when you're converting a garage into a living unit. I want to see
a garage.
Sorry?
Not a garage. Unless it's an attached garage. If it's an attached garage, then it is a junior accessory dwelling unit.
Yeah, that's
detached,
sorry. Okay.
Yeah, then it's an ADU.
Got it. So yeah, this is an attached garage. I have not seen an appraisal on that because technically you're also getting rid of possibly an asset to the building that people would want to buy. So I don't know how an appraiser is looking at that. I will have to check that. I know a few of those. So if you were to get rid of the garage and convert it into a junior living unit, would that affect the appraisal to the negative? Because it's seen as you're sort of getting rid of a selling point of the property. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's like a swimming pool. I mean, sometimes there's value added for a pool. Other times there's value deducted. You know how that works. And, okay. And I think it's kind of the same way for an ADU right now. Until we get enough of them out there where lenders and appraisers can kind of have, substantial comps to choose from. And unfortunately, a lot of the, even if there's a lot of ADUs in a given area, if they're dated, I mean, if it was 20 years ago since they built the ADU, from what I understand, the appraisers can't even count that.
Right. Well, this first segment is about done. So you have a really great short books that I think is a really cool read. So if people want to get a hold of you and find out how to get that book, how would they reach you?
Go on our website, www.crestbackyardhomes.com. Open up any page and there's a tab on the right, a red tab that says ADU guide, and then you just download that guide, and that's a step-by-step process. It's everything I do when I go out to analyze or evaluate a property to build an ADU. There's a certain protocol I use to determine what it's going to cost to do it. And that this ADU guide is that step-by-step process. If a person was a real handy person, they could go through that every step of the way, and they'd probably end up saving themselves about $5,000 on a lot of the upfront fees that you either pay a contractor or a consultant to do it.
Yeah,
or an architect.
Yes, and it gives you a really great starting point of walking you through the process if you're new to it, especially if you're an owner-occupant. It's easy on the eyes, and it's not difficult to understand, so I really liked it. So I'm excited about the next show because we're going to talk about a prefab plant and a lot more, so we'll see you next week.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.